Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Rugby Rant Podcast Show, your premier North American rugby podcast, growing rugby one fan at a time.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt, and I've got a super special individual to introduce today. We're flying together in this episode, episode 166 of the Rugby Rant Podcast Show. And I have got, like I said, the super special guest, none other than James Dealey from MLR Stats. What's going on, James?
Hey, Rob, how you doing? Pleasure to be here. Feels very strange doing it as a two-man show today. I'll try my best to fill a big guy's shoes.
Well, they are big shoes to fill. You know, they're actually pretty easy to fill, honestly, but that's beside the point. Listen, for all that don't know, James does a tremendous job with MLR Stats. James, where can they find your bit of information?
Sure. Well, I'm primarily active on Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, I am at jamdelay, J-A-M-D-E-L-A-Y. And on Instagram, it is at MLR Stats.
Yeah, and for those of you guys who haven't seen it, check it out. It is wonderful stuff. I actually found those team cards very useful in week one when I was doing some commentary for the NOLA Gold. It was really nice that you got that, James. You got individuals who was new to the team, who had exited, and then what their international status was, which was a really, really cool feature. Coaches. I think that where they played and some other bits of information that just help people become familiar with the teams.
Yeah, appreciate it, Rob. That was quite a lot of work to put together. So it's good to hear that they went down well.
It did look like a lot of work, but it didn't go unnoticed because there were some other commentators that do some color and play by play with the MLR production crews that took notice and kind of tossed that information around to the rest of us. So you're getting important.
And love to hear it. Feels very strange, but I'm happy to help. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. So folks, what we've got is, you know, Scott's a little under the weather. He's got a little one at home. So every cold the kid catches, he catches. We know that Ty's on a bit of a hiatus to take care of some personal stuff. James was fortunate. You know, he's doing some good stuff with stats. And so I said, hey, James, you know, we have a need for kind of a fresh face to fill in some shoes. And so James, when he is able to join us, is going to jump in and do a bit of work on the Rugby Rant, provide us with a new angle with his stats. And fortunately tonight, we have his services available. So he's going to drop some knowledge on you. You absolutely don't want to go away. We're going to be right back at it. In just a moment, after we hear a little bit about the Super Brew contest, we'll be back. All right, we're back with our segment Around the Pitch, and we're going to throw some new stuff at you, some maybe things that flew under the radar. Some will, some won't, some will land, some won't. We'll see what happens here, but I think you're going to love the stuff that James is going to bring us and what we're going to call What's the Dealy? So we'll get into that in just a moment. I want to first talk about one of my pieces here. I promised a friend I would do a little bit of a plug. The Florida Invitational Players Showcase is coming up. There we go. It is in Florida, in Davis Park in Ponte Verde, Florida, May 11th through 12th. It's apparently known as St. John's County. There's going to be a boys U19, U16 division, a girls U19 division, and they're pushing for U14s if they can get enough interest. Cost is $250 per team. It's for high school players who want to be seen by colleges. And folks, just so you know, and I'm just going to pull it up so I don't miss something here. My mate who sent this to me, shout out to Bobbitt, Mike Spontak, who threw it my way. But they have a number of college coaches have come to watch the showcase, to watch some of the talent. You got Life, Ark State, Iowa Central, three big programs, FSU, Florida, University of North Florida, University of Central Florida, St. Thomas, Ave Maria, University of South Florida. And it's so a great plethora of coaches to get eyes on some of the talent. And then you've got teams like Jacksonville, the Wolverines, Raleigh, Charlotte, Eastside Lions, Wando, Aspetuck, Charlotte Cardinals, and the Florida, is it Jaguars or Jaguares? I don't know. But there's some really good teams that are joining the fray. So if you want to get a look on this, bring your team down there and you can get noticed by some top level coaches. So with that, I'm going to turn it over for James to talk about what's the dealie in his world.
What's the dealie? It fits perfectly with the, you know, with a name like this, you've got to have some kind of deal, acronym, deal, pun going on, whatever. What's the dealie works fantastic. So every week I collate a load of stats from the round of Major League Rugby and I pull up, you know, just make a note of everything, any milestones that are reached, anything like that. So I'm just going to roll right into it. Jason Robinson, Old Glory DC fly half, became the first DC player ever to pass 200 points scored for the club. And he is the 12th player in Major League Rugby history to reach that mark. Robinson obviously had a hell of a season, was a hell of a stint with Old Glory a couple of years ago. Then went off to play in France. He's back this year. Looks like he's just doing the same thing he did in the past. And if any of you have, you know, follow my pages on Instagram or on Twitter, you will already know this. But we have the first two members of the 2,500 points club. So these are the first two teams to have scored 2,500 points all time. And they are, unsurprisingly, both founding members. They are Seattle Seawolves, who sit on exactly 2,500 right now, and San Diego Legion, the big rivalry in MLR, probably the most storied rivalry in MLR. Both hit 2,500 points scored all time on the same day, probably about 2 hours apart, roughly, which I think is quite apt for their rivalry. I don't know if anyone in the teams has seen that, but I hope they're both in fun at any mates they have on the other side. See who was going to be first to 5,000, 3,000, 4,000, anything like that. Now, most of the landmarks, the milestones that were reached this week were Dallas Jackals related, and that's because of their huge win over Anthem RC. They won 28-68 on the road, which is a single game points record for the club at 68. It is the single game try scored record. They scored 10 tries. It is the largest winning margin in club history of 40 points. Their previous club record for the winning margin was 8. So now it's 40, and that might take some beating. It also sets a new MLR record for the most individual try scorers in a team in a game. The previous record was set by the Toronto Arrows, who scored 9 tries, or 9 players scored 9 tries. So, you know, no multiple tries there. Every single try was scored by a different player. Dallas, they scored 10 tries with 10 different players. I don't think that's going to get beaten for quite some time. And now we've gone for quite an impressive record to a surprising one, given that this is Dallas's third season in the tournament, in the league. Martin Elias becomes the first player in club history to pass 50 points with the club. Adrian Carroll, so there was sat very close for quite some time, and he's only just been beaten. Martin Elias has just passed 50, and he scored 21 of those in this game alone, which is a season high for single points scored in a game. And it's not unsurprisingly, it's one of the highest scoring games of all time. It's the fourth highest scoring game in Major League Rugby history on 96 points. Rob, that's all I have in terms of the milestones.
Well, those are some great milestones, James. I love that you share those with us, particularly focusing on Seattle and San Diego. I mean, two of the OGs in the league, and just the fact that they achieved that 2,500 points mark on the same day, just a couple hours away, is rather apropos, as you said, for that rivalry. And it's kind of interesting to see how that rivalry will continue over the course of the 2024 season.
Absolutely. What's quite funny is that San Diego Legion have been on top in terms of points scored for a while, and the Seattle Seahawks just managed to sneak in there and get it first by about 2 hours, which I'm sure they're very happy about.
Well, I'm sure my good friend Matt Cartwright will be celebrating with either a celebratory bourbon or a cheap cigar, one of the two. Nevertheless, that was pretty cool. And just the fact that the Jackals had so many milestones that they've met, given their kind of rough start in the league over the last, two seasons. So it's good to see that they're making some inroads in a 2-1. It's good to see that they're on a winning track. Let's hope that continues.
Yeah, they look much stronger this season. So, I'm not sure all of those records are going to be broken. Who knows?
Yeah, of course. And by the way, Adrian Carlisi, on the hounds. So, like to see him setting some milestones, setting some records with the hounds this season. That'd be a good thing. All right, I'm going to jump into my other around the pitch piece. And this one is a little bit more of a global view. It's rather interesting, courtesy of America's Rugby News. 2027, as we know, will be in Australia. It's going to be an expanded format, 20 teams to 24 teams. We know Japan is qualified, and then there's going to be another Asian team that qualifies. So two teams from Asia will be in the mix. We've got four from Europe. And then interestingly, one of the big things, and the reason why I talk about it, because it impacts North America, it impacts Canada, it impacts the United States. There is going to be no North American qualifier and South American qualifier anymore. It's going to be a combined regional qualification between North America and Oceania. So South America will have a qualifier, but North America and Oceania will have a combined regional qualifier in the form of the PAC Nations Cup. So let's see, Samoa, Tonga, Canada, and the U.S. will all have to qualify have an opportunity to qualify for one of three spots. We know that Japan and Fiji have all already qualified. So, there's going to be an odd man out in that grouping of teams, being, like I said, Samoa, Tonga, Canada, and the United States. So pay attention to that as we build towards 2027. It should be interesting. I know that Scott Lawrence is gearing the Eagles up, and we'll see. Hopefully Canada can make one of those, make a big challenge for that qualification as well. So we got one more. This is interesting. I wanted to throw as kind of an enticing morsel, if you will, to James to join, periodically when he's available, by throwing him some of those ball stats from Sportable and see what he can make of those, because he is the stats man. So I threw them at him. For folks that don't know, week one and week three are the two matches that Sportable recorded the ball stats, because they are the nationally broadcast FS matches. Week two did not have a nationally broadcast FS match. Therefore, we have 2 weeks worth of ball stats. And I asked James to break them down a little bit. And basically, was there anything useful to come out of those ball stats, perhaps things that folks should be looking for as we head into week four and beyond?
Well, yeah, and I must say, this is an awful lot of numbers. Thank you for sharing them, Rob. Numbers are my thing. There are a few little oddities in here. The fact, I don't think that hang time really gets enough attention, especially for box kicks. So this part of these stats measure how long the ball is actually in the air for, which allows your chasers to get underneath it, to position themselves right, to interfere with the opponent's chasers. The longer it's in the air, the better, especially only if you're obviously trying to chase for it. If you're trying to go for territory, then it doesn't really matter how long it is in the air, as long as it gets out the pitch. And there's a couple of like standout stats here. One of these, Rob, the first one is actually something you raised, is penalty kicks to touch between San Diego and LA this weekend. Each had 7, but LA gained 80 meters more with those kicks than San Diego did. Now, there are obviously some factors here. You know, it might be the territory in this game was 59% in the favor of San Diego Legion. So it could be an influencing factor could be the fact that the Legion had less space to actually kick it without the ball going dead, maybe. But 80 meters is a hell of a long way. Whether it means that LA are actually getting their lines cleared much more effectively, or if they're getting themselves in a good position to launch an attacking platform, it's hard to say, because we don't actually get any kind of positional, you know, whereabouts on the pitch were these kicks, but the distance is significant. The difference in distance there. There's some other things as well, you know, like box kicks. San Diego Legion used almost twice as many box kicks, although the average distance was lower. The lineouts, the analysis for lineouts is incredible for this thing. It shows, you know, total lineouts, average distance for the lineout throw, whether they went to the front, the middle, the back, or long, you know, way over the top. The average spin rate of the ball, the average spiral efficiency. I'm not even sure quite what that means, but the fact that they have that is ridiculous. And based on these numbers, San Diego had 18 lineouts total in the game and threw to the front 12 times. So 2/3 of their lineouts were to the front. If you're an opponent and you have access to these stats as well, you'll say, well, okay, they're going to likely throw to the front. We can defend against that. Whereas LA were much more kind of spread out. 3 to the front, 7 in the middle, 6 in the back of their 16 lineouts. So a bit more difficult to predict. There's still all kinds of things here. Passing, scrum halves for both sides. Now, San Diego Legion only used 1 scrum half, but still had pretty close to twice as many passes as Niall Saunders and Taz Smith for LA combined. So Connor Tupai for the Legion had 86 passes. The average pass distance was 8.1 meters, which is higher than either Niall Saunders or Taz Smith. So Connor Tupai was passing more and further than his opposite numbers in this game. His total pass distance of those 86 passes was roughly, or not far off, twice as much as the LA scrum halves combined. So 695 meters compared to 354. So I don't know quite what those numbers translate into, but the fact that we have this data means opens up so many more possibilities for analysis. There's just so much data here, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. It's almost like I'm curious. I will really be curious. I will of course be at the Hounds home match on the sidelines. I'm going to get there early, have an opportunity to talk to the coaching staff a little bit. I'm hoping to catch up with Matt Wagner, one of my good mates that coached for the Hounds, and talk to him a little bit about some of those ball stats. Like, how are they using them? What do they find useful? And they may not even have really touched on them yet, because they won't, you know, San Diego or the teams that we're gathering data from, as you talked about San Diego and LA this last week, and then the previous week was Utah. And, Utah and Houston, they may have used the Utah information from week 1 and week 2 when they played Utah. So it'd be interesting asking him if they used that data at all. Wow. I really think it was interesting the way you talked about the fact that 67% of the ball for San Diego was going to the front jumper. We know that Hugh Roach was playing the number 2 position, I believe, for San Diego. And I know that there were times where he struggled with the line out a little bit. And I'm wondering if that was the reason that they went to the front. It was a little bit more of a safe, conservative play.
It's possible. For them. It's very possible. But if I was, you know, there's no, because we've only had 2 matches that have used this data, it's impossible to know if that's an anomaly. The you know, 12 out of 18 lineouts go to the front. whether that was just for this game, you know, like you said, Juric was struggling with his lineouts. Could just be it. And then, you know, next week it could be zero at the front. And they've just, exactly what you said, they've done it to safely secure the ball. Who knows? It's impossible. We've got too small of a sample size. But if I was an opponent looking at that, that would be highlighted.
Right. I found it interesting. I looked at that Houston-Utah match and just the number of passes from Utah compared to Houston. I can't remember off the top of my head, but something stood out, like 200 passes from Utah versus like 77 total passes from Houston. I was absolutely floored by the difference in the pure numbers of passes by each team.
I've got it right here. It's exactly 200, like you said, to 73. So it was even less than what you mentioned. But that does make sense. You know, Houston in this game, Houston delivered 187 successful tackles, which is the season high at the minute. So obviously they weren't going to throw many passes. They were too busy trying to stop bodies.
Right. So, and maybe that's where there's some usefulness is to cross-reference some of those stats and kind of identify some weaknesses or strengths of some opposition. But again, given that, you know, San Diego and LA are going to be featured so frequently in these national Fox Sports matches, it'd be interesting to compare the data because we will be able to see some, some comparables between, you know, week to week on some of the same teams.
Yeah, well, that's the hope, at least from a stats head like me, is that we'll get a bigger sample size and be able to start recognizing some more patterns as we have, you know, the same teams using these figures.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff, James. I thank you for bringing it to us. I think some people appreciate it, especially those hardcore ruggers who really like to dig into the numbers. Again, check out James and his stats on Twitter at Jam Delay. Right? Is that correct?
That is correct. JAMDELAY. Pretty similar to my name.
Yep. And Instagram?
And on Instagram at MLRStats.
Right. There you go. So check it out, folks. I think you're going to like it. When we come back at the turn, after we hear a word from our sponsors, we're going to be talking about the rant of the day, way too early predictions for who's going to make those four playoff spots in both the East and the West. We're going to pick it apart a little bit. Hopefully we get some more numbers from the stats man right here who came to join us. Nevertheless, we'll be back at the turn. Got to pay some bills. We'll be back. Stick with.
When we pick up the ball, we also pick up a legacy. A legacy that stretches beyond your current team. A legacy built on the backs of those who came before you with hard work. And for those who will come after you, we promise it won't be easy. But we'll be there, supporting you on and off the field.
All right, we're back, folks. Glad you stuck with us. And once again, I want to thank Shop MLR, powered by Rugby Now, for supporting both the Rugby Rant as well as MLR Stats. James, how do they help you and how can they help your fans?
Absolutely. So if you were to use the code MLRStats, MLRSTATS, all in capitals, it will give you 15% off your order at checkout from Rugby Now.
Yeah, that pays for like shipping at least. That's kind of a nice
deal. Absolutely.
And man, they get that stuff to us quick, which I love. Yeah. So it's
even up here in Canada, they are quick. Yeah.
Awesome. That's good to know, especially for our friends up north. All right. And by the way, speaking of Rugby Now and Shop MLR, I want to go ahead and throw a shout out because they sponsor our Super Brew contest. And this week, week three winner was none other than me. Yep, I won. I've never won before, so I'm going to gloat while I have the opportunity. But of course, I don't win the gift card. $25 gift card from Shop MLR, courtesy of Rugby Now, is not going to the Hammer. I just can't do that. I got to be honest. I got to be, ethical. So I'm going to pass it down to the number two, who also got 7.25 points. But I think I won it according to Superbook, because I made the biggest jump from week two to week three in terms of my, I moved up 23 spots. So I'm giving it to Punkus Arnett. He already knows. Congratulations, my man. He's a Seattle Sleewos fan. I'm sure he'll be picking up some sweet merch along the way from Shop MLR, courtesy of Rugby Now. And we're going to get into it.
I finished 15th, if anyone's wondering, in this week.
You're what?
I finished 15th. Yeah.
Hey, that's noble. That's noble.
It's okay, but it's no 7.25 points, that's for sure.
Well, but it's noble. I wish I could, if I could just hit 15 for the season, I would be a happy man. I'm usually far less than that. But we're going to get into the rant right now, and basically we're into week three, head into week four. By the time this comes out, you may be actually watching the game on Friday night. If I'm not mistaken, that's a game out. Is that a game out in the West? Yep, that's Seattle and Houston. So we'll talk a little bit about that one. But we hope you catch the Rugby Rant at least at some point. Nevertheless, way too early predictions as we head into week four. Let me just, for folks that don't know, this year they went on the fly and changed up the playoff format when they went to 12 teams with the addition of the Anthem. And I think we got what a lot of people like, which is more better, more playoffs. And that is basically the top four seeds, the top four point-getting teams from each conference will make the playoffs. They'll be seeded 1 through 4. 1 will play 4, 2 will play 3 in a quarterfinal. Then we'll get a semifinal because each of those winning teams will play one another. And then, of course, the champions from each conference will play in the final, which we now know is going to be August 4th at Snapdragon Stadium out there in San Diego. So now that we know the format, and it's way too early to tell, we're going to go on a fishing expedition that will yield probably fuck all. We're going to start with our in the East. I'm going to give James a floor here, and he's going to talk about who he thinks will be the top one, number one and number two seed. So James, take it up.
Absolutely. Sure thing. So in the East, number one shouldn't really be any surprise. I've got the New England Free Jacks, the reigning champions. They should be the favorite in the conference. They should be aiming to retain the shield and be the second team to win back-to-back titles after Seattle. I think they had a bit of a bump in the road already with Old Glory DC beating them at home, their home opener to spoil the party, but still picked up 2 losing bonus points in that. So they have 11 points out of the maximum 15 right now. And I think they're going to just keep on rolling. But I do think that pretty hot on their heels will be NOLA Gold for their first ever playoff appearance. Right now, the Free Jacks and NOLA are 1 and 2 in the East anyway. So I think it's going to keep going that way. NOLA have looked much improved. They were a bit, you know, up and down last year, but it looks like they've found some consistency there, and they've been rolling through these first 3 weeks. Even in the game against the Free Jacks, they gave it to them for the first half, and the Free Jacks did look rattled. And just couldn't keep it up for the full 80. So I think those are those are going to be my top two in the East. And Rob, I don't know if you agree or if you disagree or what you think.
Well, yeah, I can't disagree with you there. I'll just talk about why I agree. Number one, I think New England made a statement last week when they beat number two NOLA by 6 points. NOLA did get that one bonus point, which was much needed. They did trip a little bit on the loss to OG, but it was a well-fought game. And I think the difference was that Patros had an uncharacteristic game with, you know, off the tee. He missed 2 penalties. You know, that's 6 points that were off the team sheet, and that could have very well have, you know, would have won them the game. And I tell you, a guy that I absolutely have enjoyed seeing for the first time is Reese McDonald, pure class. His acceleration is absolutely stunning. Reminds me a lot Bowden Barrett when he finds a gap and he makes the break. Pay attention to that kid. I think he could be a candidate for player of the year. So let's hope. Well, I hope he doesn't have that stellar a year, but I hope he plays well because he's absolutely electric to watch. And I picked number two, Nola, 1 point behind right now in the standings. My question for them, and you know I'm a Nola fan, guys, but which second half team will show up, right? Week one, they came through in the second half. I think it's what made the difference. But the last 2 weeks, they really have left a second half that's been wanting against the Anthem, a team that they should have scored more points against, I felt. They really lost the second half, 19-10. They had them shut out in the first half, so I was a little disappointed not to see them do that. So I think they have some work to do there, but right now they're running pretty well. All right, James, let's turn our attention towards number three and number four, who we think will make the playoffs in the East.
Well, for number three, I think it will be Old Glory DC. Like I said, they ruined the home opener for the Free Jacks. They're going to look for some revenge after the Eastern Conference final defeat to the Free Jacks last year. They look like a strong team. They're back with they've got Jason Robertson back. They haven't even, you know, they've got 1-1, lost one, drawn one. That the draw is going to be a bit of a, again, another bit of a slip up. But I think that was a lot of missed opportunities for the Flags there. They that was their game to win, I think. You know, Robertson missed a few penalties. There was a few opportunities there that they didn't convert on. I think Old Glory are going to be quite comfortably in the third place in the East slot. And they haven't even played with Danny Susatala yet. They've only just got Axel Müller back, and he's the player of the week. So he's a stud, and I think Tusitala is only going to make them better when he comes back. I think third spot is Old Glory. How close they're going to push Nola for the second spot, I don't know, but I'm hoping it's going to be close. Then, moving on to my fourth spot, just about squeaking into the playoffs, I have the Chicago Hounds. They are my team this year. There's quite a few former Toronto Arrows that play there this year. I think they are much improved on last year when they had, 3-13 season. They had all the star power on the roster, but didn't really convert that onto the on-pitch performance. We've seen glimpses of it this year. For them to draw with Old Glory DC away is probably a better result than Old Glory DC drawing with them. I think they should probably take the points and run from that one. They already have a win on the board. They've already, they're looking solid. They're looking like they're improving week to week. And they have some serious names now. Dave Carney just made his debut. They have Dale Fawcett, MLR's all-time leading try scorer. Adrian Carlser, who we mentioned earlier, is now sitting in the back in the fullback position for the Hounds. He's looking solid. He's looking good. I'm not entirely convinced of this Billy Meeks at fly half experiment, but I will see how long that goes on for. But I think they will they'll secure that fourth spot in the Eastern Conference.
Well, fans, I will tell you, I agree with James in terms of the three and the four, who's going to fill those spots. What I disagree with, and I'll talk about in a moment, is the order. Oh. Okay. Yep. So I'll talk about that. But we agree in a lot of areas, by the way, especially the specifics as to why we think these two teams will be in the playoffs this year. But let me break down my take on things. I think Chicago's actually going to be in the number three spot, and they're going to eke out over OGDC. And, they both tied one another this weekend. One of the big reasons is depth, and it's something that I saw in that opener against NOLA. So I'll start with OGDC, who I think is going to be four. I think they have a solid core. As James mentioned, they had Tusitala coming back, and Robertson is absolutely in fuego. And, of course, Axel Müller putting on a show, hell of a player. I think he's going to be another one of those guys that's going to put his hand up for back of the year or player of the year. My thing about OGDC is they have a lot of young guys. I love the philosophy that they're getting young American players into the mix, and guys that I personally really like, a guy like Bill Whiteside, a guy like Gross, a guy like Buckley, and Koikoi Nelligan, all Americans, all quality young boys that will develop excellently. The question is, bringing them into the fold in the second half, until they get a lot more minutes under the belt, you know, will the coach have to, you know, just will he trust them enough to bring him in early enough so that they can make, you know, so that, you know, players don't get tired and let things slip a little bit. It's all a question. So I just think that's going to play to the advantage of Chicago. I think is going to be a number three. They have the depth this year. That's the biggest thing, you know, supporting them. I mean, think about this. Last weekend against OG, they left O'Keefe off the team sheet. They left Rumball off the team sheet. Butch was on the bench coming in late. There's a lot of other really quality players that were, you know, not in the starting 23, which is a luxury. I think they're going to have the depth to really push this team all the way through the 18-game season. But I agree with James, okay? I agree with you, mate. The question is, this experiment of Billy Meeks is not a natural 10. He obviously holds the ball well, draws in defenders, but sometimes, you know, he's getting caught in the rucks a little much. I just hope he, A, doesn't get hurt, or B, you know, do they have a B option, like at the 12 spot, that can actually direct the offense when Meeks gets stuck in? Those are my questions. They have a really good defense, so they got to cut down on the penalties. But nevertheless, you know, I think they're going to be in that 3 spot.
You're absolutely right, Rob, and I agree that their depth is unparalleled, pretty much. Definitely in the East, I think, with the exception of maybe the Free Jacks. But they had a talented roster last year, and we didn't really quite see it gel on the pitch until the very end of the season, where they picked up a couple of wins. I'm just wondering if that's going to happen again. That's yes, they have the depth. Yes, they have the talent. Can they make it work? I don't know yet.
Right. Agreed. And the cool thing about is interesting. I learned this weekend. Apparently, the Hounds have actually played through week 4. They will have played in 4 home openers. They'll have played in the 3 home openers of each of their opponents. And they will, of course, be playing in their home opener coming up in just a couple of days. So take that, Mr. Stats, man. I got one of my own.
That's a brilliant stat. That's fantastic.
All right. Hey, before we leave the East and start looking at the West, and we're going to turn it over to James for a moment, Miami and the Anthem, both 0-4. One of them is going to get a win, probably, unless they kiss their sister. One of them is probably going to get a win this weekend, so that'll be good.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, it would be good to see a franchise first win. I'm not going to say who it is. I don't want to curse anyone or give any. I don't want to jinx it in any way, but I'm looking forward to seeing that as a neutral.
All right, so now let's turn our attention towards the West. Again, same format here. Who's your number one and number two? I'll hit mine. We'll come back to you with 3 and 4.
Sure. So my number one for the Western Conference is the Seattle Seahawks. They were really unfortunate last year to finish second in their conference with a 12-4 season, behind literally the best regular season in league history, with this Legion going 15-1. I think Seattle could replicate the 12-4 season again. They're unbeaten right now. Who knows? They could be 15-1, 16-0. Bit too early to say, but I don't know. I think Seattle will take this Western Conference. More, they're looking solid. There's a little bit of concern in that they haven't scored any bonus points yet. They've got 12 points, 4 per win. They haven't scored any bonus points. They're relying quite a lot on the boot of Mac Mason. I mean, he's a star player. He's unbelievable. But can they keep it up? They need to start producing tries, because they need the bonus points if they're going to finish first. That could be the difference. Second place in the Western Conference, I have the Houston Sabercats, who are right now sat in first place. The only other unbeaten team in MLR, other than the Seawolves. They face the Seawolves this week. So Houston versus Seattle could be quite a measuring stick for where these teams are against, you know, playoff level opposition. But I think Houston Sabercats will finish second in the Western Conference. They've made the playoffs the last 2 years. So that I think they're going to easily make it 3 years in a row. They've yet to win a game, so we'll see what happens once they get there. But I think they're going to easily get there, and I think they will be right on the heels of Seattle pretty much the whole way through the season. They do have the scoring touch at the minute. You know, they've got David Coates, who we didn't even play in week three. They've got AJ Alatimu to step in when he's not around. Unbelievable. Gideon Van Wyk hasn't got scoring yet. They've got Tau Talatasi-Tasi, who was an arrow last year, who made his presence known in week one. They're a really, really good side, the Sabercats, this year, and I think they're going to push Seattle all the way, but I don't think they're going to make it.
Well, once again, you and I, great minds think alike, and I also had a similar result for my 1-2, so I'll touch upon that. So Seattle, I think, is going to, again, be number one. I think what's remarkable about Seattle is they're able to keep that core of players, you know, your Rykert Hattie, your J.P. Smith, right there in that core, and that sets a solid foundation and a solid culture in that in the Northeast for Clarkie to build on. I think a lot of Coach Clark. I think he's an amazing coach. He's smart. He keeps his cards close to the vest, which, I respect that about him. But the fact that he has this, you know, core culture that's been with that club for quite some time means a lot. And then they added in that dispersal draft, as you mentioned, a couple of arrows and then, you know, a couple of guys from New York, including my guy Chango, Chance Wengaluski. And I am looking forward to that Seattle-Houston matchup because I also had Houston at number two. I think they're a really balanced team, both in the forwards and the backs. You mentioned some of those backliners who are absolutely standout, and you didn't even mention Christian Dyer and Labuschagne, both of who, you know, just have a magical touch with the ball in hand and a great counterattack. What I think is interesting is they're able to control the pace of play. When they want to be explosive, they can. When they want to be a little bit more conservative and play for touch, play for territory, they can. And I think the key to that are their number nines. Both of them are South African, and both of them understand how to play that game, both Carl Denison and Varner. So it'll be interesting to see this Houston side look out. They could, I don't want to say surprise people because they're always in the mix, but they could be that team to beat in the West. Now, one thing I want to add, James, before we check out your number three and number four, you talked about that the kicking game a little bit. What I think is interesting about Mac Mason, while not as flashy or crafty as of a number 10, a little bit more, you know, steady rudder behind that ship. One of the things that's interesting is when you talk about regular season play versus playoff play, you play with that player, that number 10, a little bit differently, right? I mean, it's like, yeah, you know, look at England and how they did with who played number 10 in Farrell's absence, George Ford. George Ford, you know, just controlled the game with his boot. And look, you're not in the playoffs. When you get to the knockout stage, it doesn't – bonus points don't matter.
Oh, a one-point win, it doesn't matter. Look at South Africa in the World Cup. They won, what was it, the last three games, the quarterfinal, the semifinal, and the final by 1 point. Right. Doesn't matter. Just win.
Right. So all Seattle really has to do is get into the playoffs, and I think then, you know, somebody like a Mac Mason with his boot, mm-hmm. with his ability to control the game with his foot, it can be a difference maker. All right, enough of me, more about you. What do you got at number three and number four? I'm interested because so far we agree. Let's see if there's a departure.
So number three, I have the San Diego Legion. Now, through the first 3 weeks of this season, the San Diego Legion looked like a husk of themselves from last year. They did suffer a huge amount of loss through their players being good enough to get Super Rugby contracts, essentially. I think they lost four or five players to Super Rugby. They struggled to fill those gaps. You know, we saw Josh Henderson. He played a blinder against Seattle the first week. He scored all San Diego's points. Scored 19 of 19. He hasn't played since. Hoping he's not injured, but we have seen Lincoln McClutchie step into that fly out position, and he seems to have done quite a good job. Now, obviously, that they're without Will Hooley this year, who retired, is now sat in the commentary box with Rob, but. It looks like Josh Henderson, or I thought Josh Henderson was going to be their starting 10 in Hooley's absence, and Lincoln McClutchie seems to be trying to wrestle that off him. So that the 10 battle for the the battle for the 10 jersey in San Diego is going to be interesting. Now, they did pick up some good pieces. They have Greg Peterson. They still have Blair Cowley, you know, these huge forwards. They still have David Tamelau as more often than not a replacement. He's a hell of a name to bring on. They've got Hugh Roach in the hooker position. They have pieces. They have, you know, players. They've just brought in Ryan James, who I'm a big fan of, back into MLR. But we haven't really seen it click. They haven't won convincingly yet. You know, they beat LA by 1 point in the SoCal rivalry. They've definitely taken a step back, and I don't know whether it's things are just trying to gel with how much turnover they had, or whether it's that we're expecting. I don't think we should expect a 15-1 season again. That would mean they'd have to win every single game from here on out. I don't think that's going to happen. Definitely taking a step back. I think they'll still qualify, but I don't think they're going to push Houston or Seattle for one of the top two places. And in fourth place in the West, it's quite a controversial pick probably, but I'm going to say the Dallas Jackals. They did just pick up a huge win over Anthem, which, you know, that's a developmental side. It's not really expected that they're going to challenge these top players and challenge for first in the conference, but still picked up a huge win. As I mentioned earlier, biggest win in their club history. You know, they've got some confidence. They pushed LA and got a good bonus point win there. They weren't that far. They picked up a losing bonus point against San Diego. The Jackals are competitive this year. They're currently sat third in the conference on 11 points. So they're, you know, they're 1 point back from Seattle. They're 2 points back from Houston. And they're 1 point above San Diego. I think this is going to be a battle in the West between all four of them. But I think the Jackals are going to qualify for the playoffs and are going to... I think there's going to be a big fight with them in the Legion if the Legion can't get there, get some consistency going. The Jackals are a defensive... Well, they tackle hard. They've got some good scorers. They've got Martin Elias has really stepped up this year so far. They've got Ronan Foley, Mitch Richardson. You know, I know these guys from their Arrows days. Foley was brilliant with the Seawolves in Hattings' absence last year. He was great with the Arrows. He looks like he's continuing again this year. Mitch Richardson is a hell of a pickup in the dispersal draft. He's a fantastic Canadian center. Nick Benn as well. I'm glad that we finally get a chance to see him in MLR action. He was unfortunately injured in his first game for the Arrows last year, missed the season. It's nice to see him getting some game time now. He's got a try at the weekend. But they have these great pieces, and I'm excited to see the Dallas Jackals fighting for the third spot, but I think they'll finish in the fourth.
Yeah, so we agree here. I also had San Diego number three and Dallas number four. And I just want to take an opportunity to expound maybe a little bit. And by the way, James just dropped some serious knowledge on you folks. So if you're not taking notes, you should be, especially if you want to win the Super Brew for the remainder of the season and pick yourself up some gift cards. Reminder, we have 150 for the grand champion, 100 for second place, and 50 for third. So you want to get in on that action. But why am I looking at San Diego number two? I think, three. I think Danny Lee is a really excellent coach. I think he creates a culture with experienced veteran players, bringing them in. But I agree with James. I think there was a lot of turnover, which could be one of the reasons why they dropped their first match this year, or their first match already, and then just won by 1 point against the LA team. You know, the loss of Juli Matias. They brought in Getu. I question whether he's going to be, you know, at what point he's going to slot in to the number 10 or possibly the 12. It'll obviously be dangerous, but can he be dangerous over the long haul? For me, the big question is age. You know, this is an 18-week season. As long as they get into the playoffs, the two-week test window could really help them. You know, a lot of those older players get 2 weeks rest, especially because none of them will be in an international play. So they'll get all that opportunity to rest and get them their legs under them before they hit the playoffs. So I picked them at number three. I just think they have a lot of vets, and those vets know how to get things done when it counts. Number four, I had Dallas. This is a much improved squad. And I think they're going to be extremely dangerous when they get it all together. We saw just how much they could run the score up scoring 68 points against the Anthem. Yes, we knew the Anthem, as James said, was a developmental side, but you know, Nola, you know, had, I think, 24-0, had him down, and then, you know, only put 10 more points on him the second half. Let's see. I'm trying to think who played him in week two, week one. But there again, it just, it was New England that played him in week one, but New England let him score 17 points. So the fact that Dallas put one on him pretty solidly is pretty impressive. They were edged by LA by 3 in week one, Dallas was. And I think if they get clicking moving forward, they can be a very, very dangerous team. And they showed their scoring touch. They had a lot of continuity last week with the ball in hand. Just some champagne tries scored by that team. So, I think they're going to be tough to beat. I think it's going to be a tough battle. Dallas is going to get into the playoffs. They're a much improved side this year.
Yeah. Now, you know, what's really weird is I was talking about the battle for the 10 jerseys in San Diego. I didn't even mention Matt Gitto. That's bizarre to me. Probably the first time he's not been mentioned in the conversation about rugby in a long time here. But like you said, we're not sure when we're going to see him. He's getting on a bit. He's already retired once. There's Ma Nonu. He's getting on a bit. Blair Cowan's getting on a bit. What you said about age is absolutely right. I don't know what the situation is with Gitto, whether he's actually in San Diego, or whether his signing was announced really, really late. I don't know if there's any kind of visa implications there, but hopefully we get to see him sooner rather than later.
Isaac
Ross as well. Yeah, he's getting on a bit. And yep. It's a very old squad.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting how they get on. All right. Let's talk about, as we close out the show, getting time here to shut her down and close out 167. We're going to recap. And this is off the cuff, James. I don't know whether I didn't mention this, but I'm going to put you on the spot here.
All right.
So be ready. So let me recap the games for week four that we're going to be catching up on. Again, by the time this is released, you'll probably be watching Seattle and Houston on Friday night. Then we got Old Glory versus San Diego, Miami versus the Anthem, Dallas versus New Orleans. Those three matches on Saturday. And on Sunday, we've got Chicago versus New England and LA versus Utah. So here we go. It is none other than the
Rugby Rants Lock of the Week.
So, out of those five matches, which one? Pick one lock. Cannot miss match from those.
I actually think this is a pretty easy conversation here. It's Seattle versus Houston on the Friday night. The clash of the undefeated teams. Come on, it's must see viewing. Is it 10:30 for the Eastern time? I'm going to be watching it.
Yeah, it should be an absolute cracker, and I made a mistake. There are six games on tap for this weekend. I was looking at my Super Brew list, and one was off the screen. So yeah, six games for this weekend. I like that pick. I do like that pick, and I'm going to be challenged here, I think, for what my lock of the week is. That's a tough one, but I'm going to go with something a little bit unusual, and I'm going to go with the Miami Sharks over the Anthem. I don't know, some reason, some part of me thinks I shouldn't be able to pick a lock of the week that involves the Anthem. Not because I don't like what they have doing or what their goals and objectives are, just because, you know, a new squad coming in so late, it's difficult to win. So, but they're both 0-3, excuse me. So somebody's going to win. I think it's going to be Miami. That's my lock of the week.
That's a great pick. Yeah, I mean, It's a first win in club history. It's going to be good vibes there.
Absolutely. So a lot of good games on tap. You guys should be loving life this weekend on the MLR. Six games in total, Friday night, Saturday, and one on Sunday. So you got one feature game bookended on either end of the weekend. Check it out. And check out us. I have got none other than Nick McCarthy coming up next week with the Run, Pass, or Kick interview. I had a great time chatting with Nick this week. So you're going to get that one coming up next week. Come back and check it out. And for sure, come back and check us out when James, the Stats Man, comes back. We know he's got a busy schedule, but he's made a He's said, yes, I'll join you every once in a while to fill in the gap that you and Scott leave with the statistics, and keep it a little bit off the cuff, a little bit different, change the pace, and have some fun with the stats, man. So, James, thanks again for joining. It's been an absolute pleasure. Screw Scott. He doesn't get to share you. I he doesn't get time with you. I do. But thank you very much for joining.
Yeah, I thought I quite liked him, but I guess if he's doing that thing to avoid me, then maybe I don't. The pleasure's all mine. Thank you very much for having me. It is an absolute delight.
Well, thank you. And he's just avoiding me. That's the problem. So anyway, we'll be back next week with episode 168 as we inch closer to another milestone of 175. I'm sure James is keeping track of all those. Nevertheless, yeah, maybe we'll make sure you get on that one with us. That way it's an extra special milestone. Nevertheless, thank you for joining us. It's been a lot of fun. Thanks again to James. Check him out, MLR Stats on Insta, and JamDelay on Twitter. So check him out. Some great stuff. And we'll be back next week. But until then, we'll see you at the next.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.